The Caravanserai program is designed to introduce a deeper understanding of Middle Eastern and Muslim cultures to American cities. Each year, the project selects a few cities to host dance, music, and film presentations. Northwest Arkansas is a participant this year. There has already been one musical performance at Walton Arts Center, and there will be another this spring. This week, Hakeem Balabas is here to discuss his documentaries. He'll show two of them tomorrow night at the Fayetteville Public Library. It's a free screening. It includes his first, A Nest in the Heat, which was about his challenge to tell his family he didn't plan to return to his hometown in Morocco. It's a poignant study into place, family, and responsibility, one that an audience almost anywhere on the planet could relate to almost instantly. Yesterday, he came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about his work on documentaries. He says the key is understanding you never know where a project might go.
Every time I've been put to the test of following a script, within the second day of shooting, I throw it away. And this happens the last time. It happened mainly because I got involved in writing this story of the myth of the two lovers of Isli and Tisilt in the High Atlas Mountains. And I wrote that with a couple of friends, one from here, from Chicago, and another one in Morocco who lived in that space, in Emil Shil, it's called. What I realized since 2005 that I've been going back and forth to visit is that I was mainly focused on locations. I was focused on the space. I was focused on everything except the people. And once I realized that, I felt so, I just felt like I was the most obnoxious person in the world. And you know what ended up happening? We were trying to apply for funding for the film. We didn't get anything. And maybe that was the best thing that could have happened to this film, because I ended up recording and editing the process of searching for that myth. And then the casting session, I had an actor and an actress who were supposed to play the parts of the lovers. And I was looking at doing like the Franco Zeffirelli version, Moroccan version of Romeo and Juliet. Mm-hmm. Literally, my wife wants me to do that so we can make some money. and so instead, during the casting session, I just happened to ask my actress one question about what was happening in her life now, or if she had anything to share with us in terms of her love life. And that just opened the floodgates, because the actors then became subjects of this film, where they were sent to this place to research their parts, and that's what we're shooting. And the idea that, you know, we may be making the film.
So it becomes sort of this meta experience.
Exactly. And I think, I mean, the film is called Defining Love, A Failed Attempt, because of the numerous ways that hit us of the real definition of love that, you know, I literally ignored.
While you're here, you'll be talking to high school students in Fayetteville and Bentonville, mm-hmm. having a workshop. What do you do in those sessions? What can...
I was talking about ways, how do you teach film now?
And well, how you can do it on your phone.
Exactly. And how do you catch up with new students, let's say, you know, I know that there's no film department per se at the university mm-hmm. here. And somebody was asking the right question, well, why? And how do you do it? How do you teach that? I remember when I first got into, you know, film school, it took me 3 months to learn depth of field and the f-stop, and to get exposed to the whole thing about light and cinematography and storytelling, screenwriting, all this stuff. Now, I think, you know, young filmmakers or students come in with this notion that they have something that's already acquired instinctively. And most of the time they are right, because, you know, if you use your iPhone or whatever phone you have, smartphone, then you can make your own films. And it seems to me like we have to maybe accompany that. I'm doing the experiment with my daughter now, where she you'd send them out to tell a story. And then when they come back, you work off of what they have done to teach them about lighting, to teach them about storytelling, to teach them about cinematography, and most of all, to teach them about editing. Because it's, you know, it's a whole It's a whole package, I guess.
And then you have the whole thing about responsible editing and making sure that you're telling what was happening.
You're telling what was happening, but you're telling it also from your own point of view. I think what ends up lost in this whole, you know, I don't know if you can call something visual a cacophony, but maybe, yes. You have to remind yourself and maybe remind your students that you have to do it from within. So I usually do an exercise with some students of mine, or when I go back to Morocco, do like some master classes in very remote areas. And the exercise is always to ask students to come up with an image that is essential to them. And most of the time, people will start telling you stories instead of that one image. But when that hits, like I'll give you an example. I had one student in some remote area in Morocco who, after 5 days of really looking for that image, came back and then he said, I think I have one. Okay, the eyes of the little puppy that I was supposed to kill. And everybody was like, oh, okay, well, no, their eyes open. And it's only because you cannot be, you know, in the definition of cinema verite of the 60s, you can't be the fly on the wall. You're just observing, you're just there, or you just work there. You have to be involved. You have to have a point of view. And it's a point of view that can change. I mean, I know that sometimes when I look at Nest in the Heat that you just watched, that was my thesis film. I'm very embarrassed. But then I can see the seeds of a voice, a seeds of something that was struggling to say, you know what, I have this stuff that I have not resolved yet, but I'm interested in sharing it. I'm interested in exploring that with other people. And if the response is what you started with, then I think, oh, maybe there's something there.
Gosh, but it seems such a thin line, because I think of Werner Herzog, who really at times can involve himself in the film. And sometimes it's just jarring. It's like, it's taken me out of the film.
It does. That's.
But that's probably maybe what he wants.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's when I'm editing, I'll be very honest with you. I mean, I think there are more days when I'm totally depressed because of a cut that I've made, and that's because I always think that I have maybe crossed a line. And that line, for me, is always about people's or other people's dignity. Whether they are subjects in your documentary, whether they are actors that you've paid, is always something. You used a very important word earlier. You said something about manipulation. There are a lot of people who have no problem manipulating you and saying this is what it is. You know, there are filmmakers like Abbas Kiarostami from Iran. I mean, and the notion is that we're lying. You know, Fellini says that about himself also, that once you introduce a camera, because there's this mic now in front of me and I'm talking to you, I somehow have to struggle in every step of the way. Like every step of the way, I have to struggle with this notion of, am I performing for you and for your audience, or am I being truthful?
Is this the same conversation we'd have at a coffee shop?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Or is this the same conversation I'd be having with myself, you know, this
right.
morning when I was like, okay, gosh, you know, what's going to happen with this interview? What am I going to do these, you know, 3 days? And you just hope that, and that's the only thing you have going for you. It's that line of being a bit truthful and being honest about what you're doing.
Okay, last question then. You struggle. You have this struggle. You're depressed during the editing. You're thinking about this. It can become an existential exercise.
Yeah, it is.
But then someone may watch this and not, and they're kind of half watching. I mean, does that bother you?
Of course it does.
Okay.
But at the same time, you know, and this is the thing where like your references help a little bit. You know, John Cassavetes used to live right on top of the movie theater where he used to show his films, and he used to go out, run after people who would leave the first 5 minutes. It's devastating to you. I mean, you can have... No, I was in Tangier 3 weeks ago for this film festival. It was the first time the film was going to be shown to a Moroccan audience. People have expectations of what you can do because you have a name or whatever. And then, you know, one person walks out and it kills you. And in this case, I mean, the guy just went to the bathroom and came back. But then you know, the screening ends, and you start hearing what people have to say, and you start thinking, the best stuff is when somebody's reading into your work things that you've never, ever meant for the film to be, but then they find the connections. And that's, again, to me, just proves that there is this common ground where we all can find ourselves, which has to do with this almost mystical truth. I want to call it like a moment of enlightenment. And you know, I'll confess this. Most of those moments when I make my films, I have never written, so I cannot say it's my doing. I think I may have arranged the puzzle a little bit. I may have moved things along the way. And I guess I may be willing and ready to receive that stuff when it happens. There are, you know, examples I can tell you. We were shooting this one scene by the lakes in the High Atlas Mountains. The DP is upset because we're losing light. My actors are cold because I've been throwing them in the water and then bringing them out. We have to, you know, there's a little bit of traffic, but once you have one car that goes by, the sound person is yelling at you. So we can't get the scene. And I'm thinking, it's an exposition scene. It really doesn't matter if we lose it. But I can't say that to my crew because I would lose credibility. I look back, and then I see this man who's walking towards us and who's wearing a blanket with pieces of plastic around his feet. And it hit me so hard because I remember a few years back, I had actually started shooting something about these people that in Morocco they call people who take God's roads. And they're almost like pilgrims. And what I found out in most cases that these are people who have somehow been abandoned. And it's always a love story, whether it's, you know, related to a parent or to a woman or a man or whatever. But there are people who roam the country on roadsides. And I thought, and this is this whole thing about being obsessed with one theme. I'm thinking, okay, this thing about faith, this thing about unconditional love, are we capable? Are we not capable of that? Whatever I'm doing now that's structured means nothing next to what I just looked back and saw this man walking towards us. So I begged for everybody to move away, and we turned our camera towards this man, and he was walking right over towards our actors, and I just let it play. And what ends up happening is a scene that I'm so proud I was offered, but that I know. I mean, I hope I can catch other scenes like that in the future, but that one scene, I know that I was just lucky that it happened.
Hakeem Balavas is a documentary filmmaker from Chicago and a native of Morocco. He is in Northwest Arkansas this weekend as part of the Caravan Sarai program. He'll screen two of his films tomorrow night at the Fayetteville Public Library. He spoke with Kyle yesterday.